Hey, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Lakers for Thursday. Brian Kamenetsky and Andy Kamenetsky. It turns out, Andy, that Anthony Davis was playing more hurt last year than we thought. How are we supposed to feel about that? That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, sometimes on weekends, but never behind a paywall. Never, ever, ever, ever. Always free for you, the listener or the viewer on at Locked On Lakers on YouTube. And we appreciate the growth of that channel. You guys have really helped us do that. Definitely take time to comment there. That's where we go to find things that we can use on the show. We like to weave people in wherever we can. So if you want to be part of the action, so to speak, that's the easiest place to go do it, is the YouTube page. You can also tweet us at Cam Brothers. So Andy, one of the big NBA Media Day stories actually didn't come from the Lakers. It came from the Phoenix Suns in terms of dysfunctionality and DeAndre Ayton and their head coach, Monty Williams, and just the whole tire fire that seems to be the Suns right now. Definitely want to get into that because I think there's some interesting parallels with the way people talk about that and the way people talk about Russell Westbrook. But let's talk about this first. It was revealed by Anthony Davis at practice on Wednesday that he was playing through a wrist injury last year that made it difficult for him to shoot. It affected his follow through. He said he wasn't trying to use it as an excuse, but it did affect his follow through and at least maybe partially explains his poor shooting from 3-point range last year. And I used the word partially on purpose. I have a few thoughts about this, but when you heard this news, where did your mind go?
Well, first of all, that it's hard to know exactly how much it did or didn't affect Anthony Davis because he played so little in January and beyond. The sample size is extremely difficult to do anything with. Like, let's just say he hurt it the first game that he played in January, or like first practice before a game. He only played 3 games in January, then 7 in February, then 3 more in April. So that is a 13 game sample size, basically spread out over the beginning part of 2022. Also, what's difficult to make anything of it is his 7 February games were the best overall percentage from the field for AD for last season, 60.6%. His numbers were actually better from the field overall, broadly speaking, post whenever this wrist injury happened than pre. And his 3-point percentage was decidedly better after injuring his wrist whenever that happened. So I'm glad AD is not looking to make an excuse out of it because it seems on the surface like a pretty poor one.
I look at this whole thing and I was like, my first reaction was, it's hard to tell because I just think he's not that great an outside shooter. I don't mean a mid-range shooter. He's got capabilities from, you know, that 18 to 20, like whatever range. But as a 3-point shooter, I think the big lesson here is he's not Karl Anthony Towns. And while I think, you know, if he's
not even Miles Turner.
No, I mean, like if he could get to a Miles Turner 33-34% place, which isn't great, but it's doable. Like that is a 3-point percentage that you can at least work with. But
no, you know, those are, by the way, I bring up Miles Turner not just because he's continually linked to the Lakers, but also because Miles Turner 33-34% for his career, those are peak AD seasons as opposed to Miles Turner's averages.
Correct. You know, that's the thing. It's like the concept of Anthony Davis as a 3-point shooter has always been much, much more fruitful than the actual production from out there. And it's not a requirement for Davis to be great because he can play at an MVP caliber without taking 3 3-pointers a game. I mean, it doesn't have to be a fundamental part of his game. Again, 16 to 20, that's much more important. And that actually does need to go down for him. I think the idea that you can just keep him down low and not have some sort of floor extending offense from him It's that ability to move the people out and be able to hit a jump shot, put the ball on the floor, use the agility, use the athleticism. That's part of what makes AD special. But it doesn't have to be three-point shooting. And so I wonder this year, you know, give it a try. But I'm sort of hoping that the three-point thing just becomes less of an emphasis in terms of what his game is. And he didn't take a high volume of them last year. So my big reaction to it was, first, from a three-point shooting standpoint, I don't think he's very good at it anyway, so I'm not sure how much of a difference it made. But then I thought, should I feel better knowing that Anthony Davis was more hurt than I thought, which might explain some of the disappointing performances, or should I feel more disappointing that he was more hurt than I thought because it means he's just always more hurt than I think?
Oh, I always assume he's more hurt than I know. I mean, honestly,
But you get what I'm getting at, right? Like, do I feel better that he didn't perform well because he was more hurt, or does it reinforce what I already think about him, which is he's always hurt?
While I appreciated the specificity that Anthony Davis provided with the wrist injury, and it does provide some context, you know, and I guess there's a little more spice and variety to this because we're used to AD at always being lower extremity.
That's
so
true.
I guess
shoulders.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's good to know that he's, you know, shaking things up a bit. He's just one of those guys, you know, I hear people who cover this team or Laker fans debate all the time or take umbrage at the idea that Anthony Davis is injury prone. It's like, no, you know, these are fluke injuries. You know, these are nobody ran on the court and like hit him with a baseball bat or like he didn't fall down the stairs. Those are freak injuries. The stuff that has happened.
He's walking outside and a piano fell on him.
Right. The stuff that has happened to Anthony Davis, this is stuff that happens during basketball games. Like, I don't know where people are coming up with this whole fluke injury thing, but B, what really matters is the recovery time. Mm-hmm. And how long it seems to take for him to get back to form. Like how this stuff happens to me, particularly when you're talking about someone with the frequency of AD, I just think it's irrelevant.
It's also, Andy, it doesn't matter in the sense that LeBron, for example, it's a freak accident that, you know, Solomon Hill takes out his leg, you know, diving, whatever. Some people, oh, it's a freak thing. You know, Solomon Hill undercut. His ankle doesn't know that. Like the high ankle sprain doesn't heal faster or differently or do less damage because it happened in a weird way. And it's the same thing with Davis. You know, freak injury, not freak injury, whatever. The injury is the injury. And they start to pile up. And it may be that he's got really bad luck. Maybe he's cursed. I don't know. There is a tendency among fans, and we'll get to actually Dave, there's something related to this that Davis said as a goal in terms of his goal for this year that is directly relevant to this conversation. We'll get to it after the break. Fans tend to look at this and guys who get hurt a lot, and oh, they're soft, you know, they're injury prone. And it's like a character flaw. I don't mean it that way. It's not like NBA basketball is extraordinarily taxing on the body. It's amazing more guys don't get hurt. When you're 7 feet tall like Anthony Davis is and you have these growth spurts and you're trying to do things at his size, like you open yourself up to incredible kinds of injuries. Certain people just physiologically have trouble with it. Lonzo Ball could miss the entire season this year. People are already talking about that because he's still got knee pain left over from it. And he's a guard, you know. Brandon Roy couldn't just the genetically certain guys just struggle with this. He may be one of those dudes, and it's not a criticism, you know, but here's his goal for this year. He talked about what he wants to do this year more than anything, what his overarching goal is, and it is related to health. And so we'll get to that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your pro and college betting football. Yeah.
College betting football.
Yeah. Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online, your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. Find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts. Bet Online, your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. The fastest, easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, and golf. But also, because This is what y'all are here for, the NBA Locked On Lakers Familia. You can get ahead of the 2023 season. Lay down some action now. The Lakers currently getting just 22-1 odds to win a championship. If you think the Lakers are being disrespected, this is the time to get them at a good number. Anthony Davis, 20-1. Well, if it's beauty or a good line is in the eye of the better, Brian.
That's true.
Anthony Davis, 20-1 odds for Defensive Player of the Year, behind guys like Robert Williams and Jaren Jackson Jr., who are starting the year injured. He should take that personally. Darvin Ham, 18-1 odds for Coach of the Year. So head to the website today. Use your mobile device. Learn more about the trends in action. Bet online where the game starts.
Okay, so Andy, you remember on Monday, on Media Day, LeBron James spent a lot of time talking about availability. And like that is, as much as anything, is what he's focused on. He understands he can't contribute if he's not there. Anthony Davis on Wednesday was asked to practice what his individual goal is for this year. He already talked about not putting too much pressure on himself and all this and whatever. But here's one place he apparently is. He said, quote, "I just want to be on the floor. I want to be able to play all 82. And if I'm not, I don't want it to be injury-based where I can't play. That's my goal." So, you know, you just heard me kind of lamenting, I guess, for a kind word for it, his injury history. And what's realistic? I mean, I respect the fact that he's like, I need to be on the floor more. That he recognizes it, that he sees that the gigantic hole in his production and his game is based in part on whether or not he's even there. But at this point, how much faith, 82 is a lot, but how much faith do you have that he could play 75 or at least be available for 75 games? They'll rest him. That's different. But, you know, healthy for 75, healthy for 70. What percentage would you bet on that?
I mean, to put this in perspective, the last time he played 75 games, which is a career high, he did it in for the 2017 and 2018 seasons. So you're going back by the end of this season, you're going back 5 years. 6 years. Am I confident he can do that? No. I mean, the last 2 years, and granted the 2021 season was a little bit contracted, but he played 76 combined. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't seem to be in the cards for Anthony Davis. And I think in certain respects, the sort of circular trap is, given how injury prone he's been, and how the more he seems to be available, the more you'd be thinking, okay, the Lakers' season could be going well, the more they could be paced towards, you know, a playoff spot, maybe good playoff positioning, the less inclined you become to want to play him for 82 games. Like, you actually may want to find a game to get him some rest.
Well, that's and he acknowledges that. Like, he's saying, you know, if they're sitting me because they're sitting me or it's rest or whatever, that's fine. He wants to be available for 82.
Sure. I mean, it feels like a low probability. I want to be wrong on this because it's extremely important for both the Lakers this season, the Lakers moving forward, and for Anthony Davis this season and moving forward. But, you know me, I like to lay down a wager. If I had to lay down a wager on this, I'm betting the under.
Yeah.
It's a safer bet.
Well, sure, but like, I mean, even like 65, I wouldn't feel confident with. I mean, there's no way to be confident in what he's doing. The other thing that I think is complicated about this, whether you're talking about LeBron or AD, is to me, a lot of this is dependent on Russell Westbrook, Patrick Beverley,
Kendrick Nunn,
and all these other guys, because if the Lakers can't afford to fall behind, they can't afford to get off to a bad start and bury themselves in the conference. I mean, if you look at it, there are probably only 10 teams realistically that have a shot to, you know, to be one of the 10, at least get in the play-in. But, you know, obviously the Lakers are not just hoping to settle for a 10 seed. You know, I mean, they're going to have, on paper at least, they're going to be so much more reliant on LeBron and Anthony Davis to get them where they want to go. It makes it harder for both of those guys to follow through on that sort of health pledge that they both seem to be making. And it's not their fault. It's Rob Pelinka's fault.
But this, though, this gets to why we stress this over the course of the entire offseason, as frustrating as it is for a lot of Laker fans, and I would even say the Laker front office, this is why you can't move Russ for the sake of moving Russ. He is, I think, the most talented player behind LeBron and AD. Fit issues and attitude, potentially attitude issues, all acknowledged. He is, if not the most talented player on this roster, if you want to argue that, he's in the upper third easily. And if you are looking to either bake in some rest opportunities for LeBron and AD while still keeping pace, or trying to offset those guys not being available because they're hurt, you need talent. It is a talent-driven league at the end of the day. So this is, you know, we talked before about circular traps. This is the circular trap that involves Westbrook. You can't just move him for the sake of, you know, feels. Like, it's got to be for something productive.
It's got to make a difference. It's funny, too. It's like, we've talked about their schedule. Like, remember, you know, we haven't recently, but it's brutal at the beginning. Golden State, the Clippers, a very vastly improved Portland team. I don't think they're a, you know, top 10, but they're not, or top five, or, you know, whatever, but they are going to be way better healthy than they were last year. That's for sure. Denver, Minnesota, Denver, New Orleans. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of their first seven games, there's not a gimme in there. The worst team there is Portland. The other six are considered like real playoff contenders. Then you get a day off against Utah, but then Cleveland again, and then the Clippers, and you see Brooklyn, and you see a potentially sneaky competitive Detroit team. Like, they have games against you, two games against Utah, three games against San Antonio. Even throw in the Detroit game, throw in the Sacramento game. I know there's going to be a ton of attention paid to how they play against Golden State, the couple games they play against the Clippers, how they play against Minnesota, and all of that stuff matters. And it is going to be relevant to how we evaluate where they are and where they can go. The games that are going to matter most early in the season, for the first month of the season, are the ones I just mentioned. Those games against San Antonio through Thanksgiving, the two against Utah, the one they really can't afford to lose games against teams that they are better than. And there aren't that many where you can look at it on paper and say the Lakers better than that team. They should win that game. If they want to keep LeBron and AD healthy and find ways to preserve them, they cannot lose those games.
Well, this is also at a time, too, where Darvin Ham mentioned that he wants to be monitoring LeBron and AD's minutes anyway. Right. As he said during media day, he's not looking to play these guys playoff minutes in November and December. So this is why, I mean, it's actually very important that, you know, beyond, you know, Troy Brown and Lonnie Walker dealing with some very minor stuff, and nobody seems particularly concerned about their availability over the course of the season. You know, Dennis Schroeder is eventually going to get his visa issues worked out. The team seems very healthy to start camp. And obviously it is very early. And as we learned last year, things can change really fast in terms of camp health. You know, Kendrick Nunn and Talen Horton-Tucker all of a sudden threw everything for a loop, but they're starting things out with everybody seeming in a really good place physically. And for all these goals that you were mentioning, that is just extremely important.
Yeah, I mean, what was it? Trevor Ariza got hurt on the first day.
Yes,
right?
It
wasn't until that started it started a sad narrative of waiting for Trevor Ariza to come save the season. It was representative of the roster construction, which they really desperately needed Ariza to be able to play and play effectively. And I think that did not happen. You know, Kendrick Nunn was soon to follow. Guys started dropping like flies. So we've touched on the roster construction a little bit. There's also, I mentioned it at the top of the show, the DeAndre Ayton story that is kind of out there. You want to do DeAndre Ayton? We haven't touched on that. That's top of mind from earlier this week. Well, you know, we'll get to Rob Pelinka and how he put this bad boy together. if not today, then for Friday's show. But let's do that next. DeAndre Ayton and the major fallout happening in Phoenix, because it does remind you a little bit of the Westbrook tension. So we'll do that next. I think, Andy, it's always instructive to remind Lakers fans that the things that happen here that are bad also happen in other places. Players get hurt in other places.
Look, this has been a beginning of an NBA season where there's just drama everywhere. You know, there's drama in Brooklyn. There's a lot of drama going on in Boston. There is
drama. Like, Steve Nash has to pretend that Kevin Durant didn't try to get him fired.
Well, he's not pretending that he didn't try to get him fired. He said that he didn't think he was 100% behind it, you know, just 97%. But, you know, not 100, but
it's very Princess Bride. He's not entirely dead. He's mostly dead.
Look, as Nash said, things like this go on all the time in families. I've tried to get you fired for years, yet we continue working together.
Yeah, that's true. I'm unfireable. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's that. I mean, the Boston stuff, like, is a... That's not even like a jokey kind of mess. That is just a real, true, like,
you can tell the players are extremely uncomfortable with going on with what's going on. If you take them at their word, they're not even quite sure the entirety of what's going on.
It is deep and ugly what's happening over there. And then you get to Phoenix and what's happening with DeAndre Ayton, who revealed on Media Day, and I found this shocking just because Monty Williams has such a reputation as a communicator and an effective coach and a human being, right? That he hadn't talked to Monty about, you know, was going back to Game 7 in the playoffs with the Suns and DeAndre Ayton. And the tension that came after he was benched in that Game 7 against the Mavericks, then talked. And this was after Ayton, correct, signed the offer sheet with, it was Indiana, correct?
Yes.
Which Phoenix match, which wasn't surprising. But they've had the tension that's been going with Ayton for a while around his contract and whether or not they would offer him a max and all these other things. And then you pile on that, the Sarver stuff. It's really ugly over there. And for all the talk about Westbrook and the attention that gets, like, other teams got problems that are, I mean, quite frankly, bigger than the ones the Lakers have around Russ.
Yeah. I tweeted it out Tuesday at Cam Brothers, just, it's never going to get the same oxygen because the Lakers are the Lakers and Westbrook is Westbrook. But this situation with Ayton and the Suns is every bit as bad, if not, I'd say, considerably worse. And Ayton told reporters after the first day of practice, quote, "I haven't spoken to him being Monty Williams, at all ever since the game. I can show him better and I can tell him it's life. Nobody cares about the uncomfortable nature of it. It's how you perform and what you bring to the table. What's said is already said." And what it made me think about, Brian, is just like there is a difference between awkward tension and hostile tension. Mm-hmm. Like the Lakers had been veering towards hostile tension last year, especially after, you know, Russ's exit interview. But like with the
there was some hostility, I think, with Frank and with Russ. I mean, that became kind of apparent.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like they were veering towards a potentially hostile situation now. But, you know, with the gift of time, Frank Vogel, right or wrong, fired, helps with this. Darvin Ham's presence. Like, I think right now we've reached a place with Russ and the Lakers that is more awkward than hostile. Like, he knows he could get traded. He knows they'd like to trade him. Maybe, all things being equal, he wouldn't mind being traded. But it's not hostile. And I suppose it could become hostile down the road. But for now, I think it's just awkward. This thing with Ayton and the Suns, that's hostile, man. Like, he's still angry at the same coach that's currently running the show right now. He's had time to sort this thing out and chose not to. On top of it, his organization essentially trapped him there. Like, he wanted out because he signed the offer sheet. The Suns didn't necessarily want him in a perfect world, but they can't afford to lose him for nothing. So they matched it. And like, yeah, he got $133 million. But he's going to get that money anyway. In the meantime, he can't get traded until January, and he has full control over any trade for this season. So Phoenix may want to wait until they can completely control the terms if they move him at all, because they're trying to maximize this Chris Paul window, which I think is still open, but it's not going to be open forever. And so, like, they need DeAndre Ayton or an equivalent talent, and that equivalent talent has to be high. And by the way, all this is happening
while you don't even know what you can do because ownership hasn't been sorted out.
And Lakers fans are not going to like the way I phrase this. How this resolves with DeAndre Ayton is fundamentally much more important to the NBA season than what happens
higher in Phoenix
because Phoenix is a title contending title caliber team. I don't think they're the best team in the West, but they're certainly right up there. They're a very good team with a lot of potential. And if nothing else, they think they're that good. So,
and in the meantime, they're trying to figure out what the hell to do with Jay Crowder.
Oh, right. That's true. I forgot about that. And so it benefits the Lakers, I think. You know, look, the Lakers, you know, the Russ stuff's going to get a lot of attention. If they, I listed those first seven games, first eight games, whatever. If the Lakers are 2-6, you know, 3-10, somebody, it's going to get a lot of attention. But assuming they just don't completely wet the bed at the beginning of the year and they're just sort of meh, the Lakers actually will benefit this year from most people at their core don't think the team is very good. And so, yes, it's LeBron. Yes, it's AD. Yes, everybody in El Segundo is sort of pretending. Although Rob Pelinka did mention it, like, you know, he said Lakers fans deserve, and you expect him to finish that sentence with, you know, a team that's contending for a championship and all that kind of stuff. And he didn't go there on Monday. He said Lakers fans deserve a team that goes out and competes hard every night and puts an entertaining product on the floor and, you know, and gives their fans something to be proud of. And that's a very different proposition than, you know, a team that's going to go out and win a title. The Lakers have the ability to kind of fly under the radar a little bit this year, and they can kind of only surprise because
by Laker standards, they'll never completely fly under the radar.
Correct. But a team that is halfway through the season and around 500, it's not going to set off the same kind of alarm bells as, frankly, it would have last year, you know, with health and all that stuff, because people think this is, most people kind of think, it's about a 500 team-ish, give or take. And so I think that will help them. I think that gives them a little bit of time. Again, they can't bury themselves. They have to play well at the beginning of the season in terms of maximizing any opportunities that they have. But they also won't be the focus of attention in the same way because the expectations are just so much lower than they were last year. I think that'll help them compared to a team like Phoenix, compared to a team like Boston, who has to navigate, quite frankly, far worse situations in terms of organizational problems than the Lakers do, except they're supposed to be title contenders. It's much, much more difficult.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you noticed this as well, but during media day, there was a decided lack of talking about championships, which I
never
think
came up.
I mean,
never
the closest it came up was Rob Pelinka talking about sort of the unspoken understanding between him and LeBron, with mm-hmm. LeBron extending and just
right.
The
LeBron saying, "I believed in the organization when I signed, and I'm still here."
Right, and Rob Pelinka saying, you know, pretty explicitly, with LeBron James, there's a responsibility to try to make the team as good as possible, you know, as good as realistically possible, because as I'm sure we're going to lay out over the course of this week, Rob listed all the things working against them right now. And it's actually true. You know, again, you can get into the whole, I learned it from watching
despite
you,
the fact, Dan, the backcourt, the backcourt has been dimensionalized.
Yeah.
which we'll talk about.
Yeah. but like, I think everybody is going out of their way to downplay unrealistic expectations and not get into the whole Lakers championship ethos. Every season we play for, you know, a title, or,
right,
you know, what the hell are we even doing? Look, if that's the case, you might fall into what the hell are you doing? And that's a bad way to treat a season. You know, a season can still be productive and entertaining and exciting without being a front runner, without a realistic chance seemingly to win a championship. And then look, who knows? The 2008 year where the Lakers ended up going to the finals, nobody thought that team was going to end up when the season began going to the finals. And they were really good, it turned out.
Certainly not well, Kobe.
No, but well, yeah, Kobe had won it out. And
right.
You know what? They were really good well before they got Powell.
Yeah, so let's save
under this stuff promise, about, hopefully over deliver.
That's the thing, is that's really what they're trying to do here, is set expectations for a team that the fans can be proud of, because quite frankly, that's step A, and they did not clear that bar last year. You know, the season before, it's a little bit different. They were good. Whatever, you know, they certainly played hard. I think that team had character that fans didn't really turn on, even if some of the personalities were a little goofy. But last year was a disaster in every way, most importantly, I think, that way, where it was an unappealing, difficult watch that nobody was proud of. And you can be bad and still proud, and the Lakers weren't. And so reset to, let's get at least that part back. Let's play hard. Let's be entertaining and all that. And we'll see. Maybe we can pile up wins in a way that surprises people. So maybe tomorrow we'll get into, obviously, whatever happens at practice, but plus some of Rob Pelinka's comments about the roster. I thought, just as we finish up, you know, kind of the first week, some of the stuff that the role guys were saying, particularly the young role players, the Lakers have a lot of dudes on this team who are in a very interesting spot in their career, which is I think always kind of a worth an examination. And we have not yet talked about the centers, previewing the center position. We've done the other position groups, so we'll get to the center position. So still a lot more, plus whatever there it is they do at practice. So thanks everybody for subscribing to Locked On Lakers on YouTube, following us there, follow us at Cam Brothers, leave us questions, be part of the show. See everybody on Friday.